I'd like to address a question today that was asked at the end of the previous year, which is the role of Psak and Mili de Agarita.
Mm-hmm.
What role is there? Is there such a thing as paskening Divrei Agada? Is one opinion correct? Is one opinion incorrect? We say Elu V'Elu. And we'll start with the comments of Rabbeinu Bachya in the Chovos HaLevavos. Rabbeinu Bachya is commenting on a pasuk in Dvarim Perek Yud Zayin, which describes the role of the Sanhedrin HaGadol. Ki palei davar mimcha l'mishpat, bein dam l'dam, bein din l'din, bein nega l'nega, divrei riros v'sharecha v'kamta v'lisa l'makom, ashevchar Hashem elokach abo. So if there's a matter of dispute concerning the interpretation of the Torah, whether with respect to matters of dam l'dam, Yaradeya, Tochosnida, or Din Ladin, Choshen Mishpat, or Nega Nega, and Yanim of Taros, or Shachter likes to quote the Gra, these are the three major spheres of Halacha. So then you should go to Yushalayim, to the Sanhedrin, where your question will be resolved. So Rabbeinu Bachya notes that the psukim only describe going to the Sanhedrin when it comes to matters of doubt concerning the law, concerning halacha. It doesn't say bein dam ladam, bein din ladin, bein yane machshava. So that would seem to imply that perhaps there is no place of psak or halachic resolution of the Sanhedrin in these types of matters. So take a look at what he says. Dibir ha-kasav ki palei mimcha davar l'mishpat uvasa l'kohanim v'asisa al-piyah davar she'yidu l'cha v'kasher tizbonin b'ma she'kalal ha-pasuk ha-rishon m'inyanei adinim, timtzeim she'ilos ha-tzrichos chiluk v'hagdara b'derech ha-kabbalah. The questions that a person is supposed to bring to the high court for matters of resolution relate to issues that you need a Kabbalah, that you need tradition, meaning to say our knowledge of the law is based off of the Torah that we received at Sinai. Lo b'derech halimud ha-sichli. The resolution, though, is not just through thinking about it, through seichel. Hincha ro'eh, shelo hizkir bechlalan inyan min anyanim hanisagim b'seichel. Note that the pasuk doesn't mention anything about things that could be apprehended using the intellect. Lefi shelo amar im nisheik binyan ha-yichud heyachu. You're unsure as to the nature of yichud Hashem, God's oneness, uveshemos habori uta'arav, or the names of God, or his descriptions, uviyasod miyasodos hadas, or any of the pillars of religion. Shetismoch bahem al zikne chachme adas v'tishayin al misores kabbalas and belvad. El amar, p'nei el tivunascha v'ishtamesh b'sichlecha b'chol adomeh l'zeh achar shetamod alein mitzad ha-kabbalah ha-koleles es kol mitzvos hadas v'yisodav upratav v'chakor aleim b'sichlecha v'nascha v'kosher shifutecha. So he says, why not? Because how are you supposed to resolve these types of questions, a theological question? The answer is, you use your seichel. Of course, one should use their seichel only after they've studied Torah and they've been appropriately prepared. But the basis of these things are not tradition, like with respect to halacha, but rather the proper tool to arbitrate these types of questions is one seichel. And that's what you should do, ad sheyisbarer hanachon v'yisbatel habatel, until you can figure out what's right is right and what's wrong is wrong. So Rabbeinu Bachya understands that that the pasuk that we began with distinguishes with respect to matters of halacha which are rooted in Mesorah and Kabbalah, versus matters of philosophy and theology, which are independently discernible to someone that is properly trained. And thus, we only need to turn to the high court to resolve legal doubts, but not to resolve matters of philosophy, theology, and the like. Presumably, what he's saying is that there's no formal halachic process or psak or the like in these matters. Now, needless to say, many thinkers disagree with Rabbeinu Bach in this point. Certainly, if one takes a more mystical approach, so then it goes without saying that even theological matters are rooted in Kabbalah and Mesorah. Chachmas HaEmes is rooted in Kabbalah going back to Sinai and in Giluyim and the like. A person can't just come up with it on their own, can't just rely upon their sechel. However, even among those who take a more rationalist perspective, it's not necessarily the case that we are supposed to come up with or able to come up with the correct understanding of hashkafic matters on our own. The Rav on Bartanura notes, he asks, why is it that it's only at Meseches Avos that the Mishnah begins with the chain of Mesorah, Moshe Kibol Torah Misina, Mesorah Yeshua? One would have expected that it begin
Brachos.
At Brachos. So his answer is that when it comes to most of Mishnayos until that point, we understand that these things come from Shamayim, come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the Mesorah. It's obvious that the Brachos and Dinei Zrayim and Moed and even Nashim and Nezikin are from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But when it comes to ethical matters, like those discussed in Pirkei Avos, a person might have thought that I don't need a Mesorah for that. I could come up with that on my own. And that's why even Pirkei Avos, or Tzdavka Pirkei Avos, where Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi decided to begin the Meseches with Moshe Kibol Torah Misinai and Mesorah Yehoshua, to teach us that even these matters, as all matters, come back to Sinai. Nevertheless, that is the view of Rabbeinu Bachya, that there is no such thing as psak in Milid Gada. The Yerushalmi might disagree with this. The Yerushalmi writes in the next source that the pasuk actually does refer to Milia Dagada. Ki palei davar mimcha lemishpat magid shebemufla shebebeis tenakasa medaber. Mimcha ze eitza, davar ze agada, ben dam lidel dam besulem, etc. Meaning to say that Yerushalmi goes ahead and explains every word in this pasuk, and in so doing says that one matter which a person should and must turn to Beis Din to resolve is Mili Dagada. Now it's possible that the Bavli disagrees with this. The Talmud Bavli, I didn't include it here, but you probably saw it last year in Sanhedrin, also goes through this pasuk, and it doesn't include anything in Mili Dagada in Pei Zayin Amud Aleph. The Bavli simply says a similar point about Bein Dam Ladam, Bein Dam Nida Ladam, Leda, Dam Besulim, but it doesn't say anything about Mili Dagada. So perhaps Rabbeinu Bachya is maintaining that we paskin like the Bavli against the Yerushalmi, and therefore we turn to the Sanhedrin for matters of halacha, but not necessarily matters of theology or philosophy. Now, if it is the case that it's a machlokas between the Bavli and Yerushalmi, what does this debate hinge on?
The Bartnura in Ovos, that seems to be against Rabbeinu Bachya, right?
Yeah. Rabbeinu Bachya lived 400 years before the Rabbi. So what is the Nekudas HaMachlokas between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi? One perhaps way to look at it relates to the goal of psak. How do you understand the idea of psak? So psak could be understood as arriving at the truth. When we try to paskin a halacha, we try to figure out which position is more correct. Another way to understand psak is that psak is needed to arrive at the normative law. We have to figure out what to do practically. Psak is not about figuring out who's right and who's wrong. With respect to that question, elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim. But what we do need to do is figure out what to do. The Torah tells us that you can't have a religion in which half the people are doing one thing and half the people are doing another thing, and therefore there needs to be, or at least in the ideal system, there is a way to arrive at a practical conclusion, and we do that through Acharav and Mahatos, and if the question remains unresolved, so it's brought to the Sanhedrin HaGadol, who will resolve the matter. But the Klale HaPsak are not really about figuring out who's right and which position is true. Rather, it's about what to do. I think I once heard from Rav Tursky that this might be the debate as to whether we paskin Hilchos de Mashiach. There's a seemingly debate in the Gemara, it's a debate in Rishonim. Some hold that fundamentally we do not paskin Hilchos de Mashiach, meaning to say halachos that have no practical relevance. And others say no, we do. It's in Gemara Zvachim on Mem Hei Amud Aleph, Rav Nachman said a certain psak concerning pigol, and Rav Yosef said, what's the point of paskining such a thing? It's Hilchos de Mashiach. And likewise in Sanhedrin. So some Rishonim, like Tosfos, say that everybody agrees that we don't issue psak on non-halachic matters, and when you do find cases where the Gemara does seem to issue a psak in something that's not relevant, there must be some practical nafkamina, and Tosfos tries to find a nafkamina. That's one answer in Tosfos. Another opinion in Tosfos is it's only when it's something like pigol that's not relevant nowadays and also won't probably happen to be Mos HaMashiach because it relates to an Aveira or an Onesh or the like. And others disagree and they say, no, we do paskin all matters in terms of even when there is no practical relevance. So what's the machlokas? So they might be debating this very point. If you see psak as a cheftza shel Torah and trying to figure out the MS and the like, so then it makes sense that even if there's no practical ramifications to this question, we would still try to figure out what the psak halacha is. Whereas, if you hold that psak is just about figuring out what to do, so then, if there's no practical relevance, so then why would one do that? And this then might be a machlokas rishonim. And that could be what the Bavli and the Yerushalmi are disagreeing about. Yerushalmi that has you bring Mili Dagada to the Sanhedrin Agado, is assuming that in matters of Psak, we do try to figure out what the halacha is, because determination of the halacha is about figuring out what's MS. And the Bavli, which seems to disagree, maintains that no, Psak is about figuring out what to do, and therefore if there is no practical ramification to this particular question of Agada, so then we don't need to know what to do. Now, we'll talk about it in a moment. There are going to be cases where indeed there is relevance and practical relevance to philosophical questions, but assuming for a moment that we're dealing with a philosophical question that there is no nafkamina, so that could be what the debate is. Yes?
Using this approach, you could say that the Rav Bartanura is just saying that it's all under the Torah Shabbat Peh rubric, that each you know, statement of the Chazal, there's no psak on that, they're just, you're saying their
correct
additional point.
Correct. In other words, as you said, there doesn't have to be, you don't have to assume that he would paskin like the Yerushalmi, he just doesn't go as far as Rabbeinu Bachya in terms of Rabbeinu Bachya's holding up the ability of the Seichel to determine these types of things. There's a number of places where the Rambam addresses this issue. You have one of them on page 2 from the Pirshei Mishnayos and Maseches Sota, and in the footnote 2, on the bottom of page 2, three other places where the Rambam says this. And the Rambam writes, we'll just take a look at this one. Kfar marti l'cha lopam, she'im nechleku chachamim be'eza ashkafa v'deya, she'in tachlisam ma'asem en ha'ma'asem. If the chachamim debate a particular matter that has no practical relevance, hare ein lo mar sham halacha keploni. It doesn't make sense to write that the halacha follows one opinion or the other. So the Rambam, for example, if you look at the one at the bottom of page 2, a similar point. Kfar yizkarnu l'cha pa'amim sheko machlokes shetia ben hachamim ve'ina tzluya b'ma'aseh el kvius svara bilvad ein makom lefsok halacha ke'echad mehem. So there's no need to issue a halachic ruling on matters of hashkafa, since there's no practical relevance to the dispute. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that the Rambam thought that both opinions are equally correct. He might just be saying that the terms a halacha like this or like that is incorrect. And in fact, this very much relates to what we saw last week. If you remember last week, we saw a number of places where concerning philosophical or ashkafic matters, the Rambam writes that this particular source reflects the minority opinion, but the majority opinion is otherwise. The Mishnah that says, Omer, Alkan Tzipor Yagiu Rachamecha Mishaskenoso, reflects the minority opinion that states that we don't try to figure out Tamei Mitzvos, but the majority view is that we do figure out, to the extent that we can, Tamei Mitzvos, even if that doesn't determine the practical ramifications. So, at first glance, that Rambam seems to indicate that there is such a thing as psak when it comes to Mili de Agada. After all, he is doing exactly that. And not only that, but he's saying that we follow the normal rules, so we would follow the majority view, and if the majority view is we try to figure out reasons for mitzvos, so then we should do so. That particular case, there might be a nafkamina, but let's say some of the others, as we saw last week, certainly there is no nafkamina. The Rambam said that the view that the world will be destroyed is a minority view, and the majority position is that the world will not be destroyed. So I can't think of any practical ramifications. I don't know how much you're going to spend on real estate. There's no halach l'maisa on that shaila. And nevertheless, the Rambam seems to say, well, we look at majority and minority positions. However, I think in light of the explanation of those Rambams that we gave last week, there really is not a question at all. Because the Rambam there is not saying we follow the normal halachic procedure of counting up the votes and determining who's the majority and who's the minority. After all, we noticed that in all of those disputes, those four examples where the Rambam did that, there wasn't even an explicit machlokas. There wasn't a majority view. The Rambam showed that the general tenor of the Torah in a number of places is in disagreement with that particular statement in Chazal. So I don't think that the Rambam is saying that we follow the normal halachic protocols of counting, because there is no basis then for the Rambam's assertion the majority view is one way and the minority view is another way. In fact, as the Rashba and the Maral note, there is no explicit statement of the majority position. Rather, what the Rambam is telling us is that the overall approach of the Torah concerning a particular issue is one way or the other way. And what I think the Rambam then is saying, which is very consistent, is that the term, like he says it in Perashat Mishnayos, the term, the halacha is kaploni, or the halacha is not kaploni, those types of terms are not correct with respect to hashkafic matters. However, when it comes to debates about hashkafic matters, there might be situations where one position is considered more correct than the other position, insofar as it reflects the general Torah outlook. This might explain another interesting Gemara. The Gemara in Ervin says that for a number of years, Shammai and Hillel disagreed as to whether or not the world should have been created or not on Yud Gimel Amud Beis. And the Gemara then says, Nimnu v'gamru, they voted and they concluded that better that it not be created, but since it was created, Yifashvish b'maisev, etc. So, Nimnu v'gamru sounds like there was an Amida l'minyan, and they voted and the like. So, a number of thinkers are bothered by that. The Mari Mintz says, what do you mean, Nimnu v'gamru? There's no halachic nafkamina. So he says, there must be some halachic nafkamina. And the Achronim come up with all sorts of conceivably very interesting questions that might be resolved, practical questions concerning whether it's better that the world be created or not be created. Others, like the Marsha, say, no, Nimnu v'gamru here doesn't mean they took an actual vote. And in light of what we were saying, I think that makes a lot of sense, which is that there's no formalized process of halachic decision-making when it comes to Mili Dagada, like the Bavli implies, perhaps against the Yerushalmi. And therefore, there is no Amida L'minyan, but that also doesn't mean to say that all views are equally correct. And what the Gemara Ervin is saying is that the more correct view is better that it not be created. And that's, in fact, very much, perhaps it's even the makor for the Rambam, for this type of idea that he does, where he goes out and he says, well, the majority opinion is this way or that way. What he means to say is that this is the general and more correct opinion as we find in Torah sources. Now, it's very important, however you read the Rambam, to understand the following, which is, even though the Rambam writes, as we saw in a number of places, that it's incorrect to say the halacha is like this opinion or like that opinion when it comes to Mili de'agada or de'hashkafa, there are many places where the Rambam does issue definitive psak when it comes to theological matters. For example, in Hilchos Tshuva and in Hakdama to Perek HaChelek, he goes ahead and he tells us the Yud Gimel Ikar Yemuna. And it's in his Mishneh Torah, it's in the Sefer Halacha. So what is he doing? Why is he paskening such a shaila in the Sefer Halacha? After all, it's Mili d'hashkafa. So the answer is very clear, which is that these are hashkafic questions, perhaps, that have very practical nafkaminas. For example, the Rambam writes, someone who doesn't believe in the Yud Gimel Ikar Yemuna is a kofer, which means that wine, his shechita is invalid. Can you, if he writes tefillin, there are a million nafkaminas. He should be, according to the Rambam, ostracized from the community and the like. And therefore, many times when it comes to hashkafic questions or philosophical questions like God's unity, so we have to issue a psak because there is certainly halachic nafkamina. Whether or not a person is a kofer has numerous halachic consequences. And therefore, the Rambam's paskening these halachos doesn't in any way contradict what he says, that we don't say halacha kiploni when it comes to hashkafic matters. If you look at the types of situations where the Rambam says that principle, that we don't paskin halachic matters, they're about questions that don't relate to heresy or the like. The question of whether the Dor HaMidbar has a chelak in Olam Haba or doesn't have a chelak in Olam Haba. So about that, the Rambam writes, it doesn't make sense to say halacha kiploni or halacha kiploni, because there's no practical ramification as to whether the Dor HaMidbar is a chelak in Olam Haba or doesn't. Yes?
It seems like that is a little circular. Only reason we have a concept of fear is because we have normative opinions when it comes to Agatha. But if you just say, well, it's a free-for-all on Agatha, then there wouldn't be a halakhic category of kfira.
Not at all. We know there's a halakhic category of kfira because there's a halakhic category of kfira. In other words, there are halachos that relate to kfira. Now, that will say that when it comes to those types of matters, there has to be resolution. It happens to be the case that it's also true that there's even more direct nafkaminas about matters pertaining to kfirah, because there's a mitzvah of emunah. And someone who doesn't believe in these things is not a maimon. You don't have to go as far as a nafkamina for kfirah. Once there's a mitzvah of emunah, there's a mitzvah of shema. Mitzvah shema, according to Rambam, says you have to believe in achdus Hashem. The mitzvah of Anochi Hashem Elokecha says you have to believe in Hashem, which, among other things, means you have a correct conception of what he is or who he is. So, that being the case, there are direct halachic consequences which have to be resolved. And therefore, the Rambam says, someone who doesn't believe in these things is halachically treated as a kofer. It's not just someone who does it, who says it, it's not just to Omer, but the Rambam writes in the Pirshei Mishnayos that someone who's even mefakfek belibo in any of the Yud Gimel Ikar Emunah has a halachic status of a kofer. So, since there are practical issues, again, both positive and negative, so there has to be such a thing as psak. I included here a brief citation of from an article that Rabbi Gil Student wrote in a critique of the limits of Orthodox theology, in which he makes this point in terms of the Rambam. Professor Shapiro quotes the Rambam, who says that there is no such thing as psak when it comes to hashkafic issues, and uses that idea as the basis for his attack on Ikar Yemuna. And what Rabbi Student points out is that certainly would not make sense within the position of the Rambam, or generally speaking, mainstream views. This might also relate to another question, which we won't do now, concerning Ikar Yemunah, which is the question of whether the definition of heresy remains stagnant, or does it change as consensus changes? This is a very important machlokas, not for now, but the Chassam Sofer famously maintained that just like with respect to the halachic process, there is change over time with respect to what's considered a acceptable view and what isn't. Basra Rabbi Eliezer, they used to be Koreis Eitzim on Shabbos. Eliezer held that Machshirei Milah Doche Shabbos, and the Gemara says that in his town they used to do that, and they lived a long life. In other words, there was no consequence. They weren't harmed for their following their Rav. Now, after a consensus was reached, and Rabbi Eliezer was outvoted, and the halacha came established that that's a chiyuv misa, so if someone were to do that, they would be chayiv misa, and they would be chayiv karis, and the like. So, with respect to halacha, that's true. The Chassam Sofer argues that perhaps even with respect to Ikar Yemuna, that might be true. So, for example, Rabbeinu Hillel, not Hillel HaZaken, but the Amora Hillel, the fifth generation in Eretz Yisrael, Hillel Sheni, maintained in Sanhedrin, Tzadi Tesamid Aleph, that there won't be a personal Mashiach. It already happened. They were referring to the Nevuos that took place about Chizkiyahu and the like. Now is not the time to get into the details of that, but does that mean that he was a kofer? So maybe it does. Okay, maybe he was a kofer by accident. That's what the Sefer Ikrim points out, and the Radvaz. But according to Chassam Sofer, he wasn't a kofer, because at that point, perhaps a consensus as to the nature of Mashiach had not yet been reached. Nowadays, it has been reached, and therefore someone that were to espouse that view would be considered a kofer. Now, it's an interesting question whether the Rambam could agree to such a understanding, at least with respect to one application of kfirah. The Rambam writes that someone who doesn't believe in Ikar Yemuna have no chelek in Olam Haba. The Rambam seems to understand that's a natural consequence of their lack of belief. even the Rambam's position on this question isn't clear. Maybe that's only true with respect to the Ikar Yemuna about God, the first five. Even then, it's not clear. This relates to the question of whether there's such a thing as Tinok Shenishba concerning Ikar Yemuna, which the Rambam does seem to hold of. So this is a broader question, not for now. Maybe another time we could talk about Ikar Yemuna, but that Chasam Sofer is an important nafkamina concerning this question. I saw another very fascinating explanation of what the machlokas between the Bavli and Yerushalmi about whether or not there's psak in Agada might actually be. And this is from a piece in Rav Kook, and I thought we would study it today because it really relates to Inyana Dioma, it relates to Hanukkah, and it relates to this question. So take a look at the passage from Rav Kook. It's on the first page of your Mari Makomos. Rav Kook maintains that perhaps there's a different understanding of the machlokas between the Bavli and Yerushalmi. Rav Kook understood that the Bavli, again, which seem to imply that there is no such thing as psak when it comes to hashkafic matters, is a reflection of the chutz la'aretz approach, which focuses on the intellect and the halacha, as opposed to the Yerushalmi, which reflects an Eretz Yisrael type of approach, which focuses on prophecy and intuition. And accordingly, Rav Kook maintained that when the Jews return to Eretz Yisrael, and we can look forward, hopefully, to a day where prophecy returns, so we will return to the Eretz Yisrael type of approach. Let's take a quick look. But this works very nicely with what Rabbeinu Bachya writes. Rabbeinu Bachya writes, why is it that we don't issue sak when it comes to hashkafic matters? Pnei el tfunascha v'ishtamesh b'sichlacha b'chol adomeh lezeh. Rabbeinu Bachya stresses that how do you resolve the question? You turn to your intellect. And that is the chutz la'aretz approach. So let's take a look at what Rav Kook writes. V'achiluk hu pashut. Deseder limud shehu nismach al sharshe hanevua v'si'ifeha ha'halachos im ha'gados mis'achdos al yado v'yesh inyanei kabbalah u'mesores b'deos kemo b'masim. Vizos hidas Yerushalmi shelo kedas chovos alvavos, aval beseder limud shebechutz laretz, she'ena ru'uya lenevua, umemela ein anfe ruach hakodesh mislachadim im ha'halacha v'nis nitucheha, hadeos hinan rak ma she'efshar lehotzi mitoch ha'sechel ha'hegyoni, ve'en l'inyanei ha'gados Shaychus lalacha, v'lo shaych aleim lo sasur. V'ze achiluk teva es hachosem ha'evdel ben abavli liyushalmi. Says, take a look. The Bavli has much more of a focus on Agada. Now, it's not really true, because there's much more Agada in the Bavli than Yerushalmi. What he means to, sorry, the Yerushalmi is more, but he means to say that Amorai Eretz Yisrael, like in the Medrash Rabbah and the like, were more focused on Mili de Agada. And that reflects the more Eretz Yisrael type of approach, which values nevuah and intuition, which perhaps is a lower form. He writes, "L'didana bavli ikar mikol makom l'chol eish yichadesh Hashem yisborach lev chadash al amo v'yachzor koach kedushas Eretz Yisrael hakodesh begaloi." Rav Kook maintained that there was a aschalta de geula, the return of Bnei Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael was a reflection of the beginning of the messianic prophecy and process, and that was a restoration, a beginning of a restoration towards the Eretz Yisrael type of approach. And in such a world, Yegaleha or Shela Yerushalmi mitzad signuno hakatzar ve'amok. That's one of the reasons why the Talmidim of Rav Kook and Rav Kook spent so much time focusing on Agada, more so than perhaps, if you go to religious Zionist yeshivas in Israel, for the most part, there's more of a focus on Milia de Agada than traditional Lithuanian Litvish yeshivish yeshivos. And that was a reflection of Rav Kook's belief that with the coming of Mashiach, this strain would become more dominant. The Yerushalmi's truth will shine forth. Shemistayeya me mahalach secha alyon v'agada mechuberes bo im halacha b'derech pu'ula nisteret. And if you look at the next source, muvana davar ha'ora'o shel kol ha'torah kol lalos gam kein ha'ora'os ha'ruchnius shel ha'deus v'amunos. It's interesting. The context here, Rav Kook writes here, it's in a letter, about the need to establish a yeshiva to promote the study of non-halachic material and thereby ensure that the members of the future Sanhedrin would be experts, not just in halacha, but in Mili Dagada, because the Sanhedrin, when it's restored, is going to be solving hashkafic matters, like the Yerushalmi says. And therefore, he says, there's a practical need to do this. Now, I'd like to try to explain this a little more. What does he mean to say that there are a Chutz La'aretz approach and an Eretz Yisrael Dika approach? And the Medrash says in Seder Olam, you have this on page 2 of your sheet, middle of the page. It's describing the Seder Olam as a chronology, it's a history of the Jewish people, and he's describing the time period of Chanukah, of Yavan. V'hitzfir, v'hishir melech Yavan, v'chulei, hu melech harishon, v'amad melech gibor, v'ka'amdot, v'chulei, hu alech Zandras Mokton, Alexander the Great, Shemalach Yud Beishana, Adkan Hayu Anaviyim Misnavim Biruach HaKodesh. Mikan Va'elach, Hat Aznecha Ushma Divrei Chachamim. So, the Medrash is telling us that there were two periods of time. There was the prophetic period, where there are Neviim, and Mikan Va'elach, so then, Hat Aznecha Ushma Divrei Chachamim. There's a similar Gemara to this in the first parak of Bava Basra. Nitla nevuah min ha-neviim v'nitna l'chachamim. So what is it telling us? This is an idea that is developed a lot in the thinking of Reb Tzadok especially, and is very prominent in Rav Kook as well, other thinkers, which is, if we were to very divide Jewish history into two periods. So, the first period of time would be the prophetic period. This is a time when there were Nevi'im, a time when there were Nisim Geluyim, the miracles and the first bias. It was a time when the Nisyonos weren't Nisyonos of denying Hashem. There was no such thing as atheism. The Nisayon was belief in Hashem or Avodah Zarah. Listen to the Nevi'im or the Nevi'ei Sheker. That there was supernatural forces and spiritual forces was unquestioned. And the Tzaduk explains that's why in that first stage in history there was such a thing as Kishuf, magic. If you look at certainly the simple understanding of the Psukim in Torah was that there was such a thing as magic. The Mechashvim were able to tap into certain spiritual kolchos to do things that were keneged Ratzon Hashem, Mechashvim Pamalia Shalmala. Why is it that we don't see magic anymore? Now, you go to a magic show, so it might be a great illusionist, but it's unlikely that's magic. The answer is, Zeluma Zebar Elokim. And in this first stage of Jewish history, where there was Gilui Shechina Befarhesia, there was Nevuah and the like, there had to be Bechira Chavshus, and the ke'ilu opposite forces, the zel umazeh of nevuah, was nevi'ei sheker. And necromancy and other such things. And there were nisim, so there was kishuf. And without those forces, there wouldn't have been bechira. And the avoda was to recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a world where a person could perceive opposite forces. In the post-prophetic world, it's a very different experience. There is no longer nevuah. There aren't nisim geluyim of the same sort. There are no nevi'ei emes, and nobody would take a navi sheker particularly seriously. The nisayon is not with avodah zarah, but it's with kfira, with atheism, with agnosticism. What's fascinating is that the medrash that we saw in Seder Olam indicates that the rise of Yavan corresponds with the termination of prophecy. Mishakam Alexander Mokdai Paska Nevua. Meaning to say, the story of Hanukkah is the story of this second period of Jewish history. The rise of Greek culture, Greek philosophy, Greek wisdom corresponds to the end of Nevuah. And what does the Medrash tell us? What does the Gemara Bava Basra tell us? Where is this authority coming from? How do we connect to God in the second period? Mikan va'elach hat aznecha ushma devei chachamim. There's been a major transition. Instead of turning to Nevi'im, we turn to Chachamim. The Gemara Bava Basra says, Nitla nevuah min ha-nevi'im, v'nitna l'chachamim. And that, the zelu mazeh, is here as well. The godless of Yavan was within the Seichel. And likewise, during this period of time, the Ikr is the Tarsha Baal Peh, which relies heavily on the Seichel. It's no longer Nevuah. Nevuah comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When we learn Gemara, we're using our Seichel. When the Chachamim of the Mishnah and Gemara learned Halacha, they were using their Seichel. Of course, there were Kabbalah. There wasn't, they didn't make it up. But Talmud Torah was an exercise in Seichel. And it was a world in which there was no longer this connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through prophecy, but rather we connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Talmud Torah, especially Torah Shebaal Peh, and using our Seichel. And that is one of the reasons why, in many sources, Hanukkah is associated so much with the Torah Shebaal Peh, Slonitan Likasev. The Yontif of Hanukkah reflects, it's the first Yontif that's post-biblical. There is no Sefer and Tanakh about it. There weren't Nevi'im anymore. And it's the Tkufa where our Avoda is Hat Aznecha Ushma L'Divrei Chachamim. And that's one of the reasons why Hanukkah, Reb Tzadok points out, is Taka, is known as Yontif of, if you look, this is the last source on page 4. Mitzvahs Ner Chanukah is called Mitzvah Zekenim because there's no kesher to it in the Torah Shebichsav. He writes, that's why perhaps when the Gemara in Shabbos says, Mai Mivarech, Sherkechan Mitzvah Tivan Ladlik Ner Shal Chanukah. Why? Because of Lo Sasor, or because Shal Avicha V'Yagadcha Zekenech V'Yomulach. So why is it that the Gemara only asked that question with respect to Neres Chanukah? Same question on Erevin, on Tzil Siedayim, Kriyas HaMegillah. The answer is because there's no connection to anything in the Torah Shebichsav and Chanukah. So Erevin is Shayach to Hotzah. Tils Yadayim Mashiach to Dine Tahara. Even Megillah, the Gemara Darshan's a Kavachomer. But this is something totally new. Now, I'd like to. So, what Rav Kook is saying is that this reflects really the Chutz La'aretz approach. Torah Shebaal Peh flourished in Chutz La'aretz. In a sense, we paskin like the Bavli against the Yerushalmi, because that is our ikur connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's our ikur way of studying Torah, like we see in the Chovos Alvavos. In fact, the Maral points out the superiority of the Bavli over the Yerushalmi relates to this point. If you learn Bavli, so it's mamish acrimonious debate trying to come up with the MS, question, answer, refutation. The Yerushalmi, it's much more noach, because that's how we get to the MS. The Gemara in Psach in Sanhedrin says, "B'machshekim hoshivani, zu Talmud Bavli." You put me, it's a pasuk from Eichai, you placed us in Choshech. That's Talmud Bavli, because in the Talmud Bavli, we have no idea what's going on. It's like trying to figure out what something is in a dark room. So, I think Rastav gave this mashal. You go ahead, you go into a dark room, and you feel something. Okay, it has four legs, so what is it? Maybe it's a table, maybe it's a chair. So you ask a question, you feel, well, does it have a back? Then it's a chair, otherwise it's a table. We're in a situation of choshech, and the way that we come to the or is through the seichel. And again, that's why even in the Bavli, it says Tashma versus the Zohar, the Yerushalmi, where it's Tachazi, there was still more of a vision, even at the time of the Yerushalmi. It was more connected to Torah Eretz Yisrael. What Rav Kook is saying is that, in a sense, we're on our way back. The pendulum has begun to swing the other way, more to the Yerushalmi's perspective than the Bavli's perspective. Now, I'd like to be mosif a couple of points in terms of, first of all, how this relates to Hanukkah, and then if we have time, at least a bit more of arichos of how to view the world in the second kufa of Jewish history. So I once heard a very beautiful avart from Rav Moshe Shapiro. On the Nes of Chanukah, and why we had the Nes of the Pach HaShemen, of the burning without consumption, which doesn't seem to be particularly important to the story. It's not really a necessary Nes. I understand the military victory was essential, but why this Nes at this time? So he noted that this is not the first time this Nes took place. When did we first have the Nes of burning without consumption? Sneh bor avayish ve'enu kal. The Nes of the Sneh was the beginning of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's conversing with the Jewish people as a nation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe then and there, Tavdunas Elokim al Arazah, you're going to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu here at Sinai. This was a beginning, the Kadmonim say, of the Giloy at Sinai. When else did we have the Nes? The Ner Ma'aravi. In the Mikdash, it burned longer than all the other candles, far longer than the fuel that was there for. Machlokas Rishonim, which ner, and how long, and what the nes was, but bo haya maschil, bo haya misayim. And the Maral points out on the Pasuk in Parshas Emor, in Gur Aryeh, referring to the placement of the menorah and the mikdash is mul parochas ha'idus, that the ner ma'aravi, that nes, the Gemara says, was edus hi l'chol bai olam sheshchina shor b'Yisrael, that it was edus that the shechina continues to be shor b'Yisrael. So the Maral compares this to Kiyum Shtaros. He says that Kadosh Baruch Hu was saying that this conversation that began at Sinai when I spoke to you as a nation continues. And it continued throughout Bayis Rishon into Bayis Sheni. But as we've noted, that during Bayis Sheni, though Nevuah ceased, it was there at the beginning of Bayis Sheni, but with the rise of Yavan came the end of Nevuah. And one would surely imagine that Kal Yisrael at this point in time were despondent. The conversation that began at Sinai has now come to an end. Did HaKadosh Baruch Hu reject us? Did he care about us? Is it over? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu once again did the same nace of burning without consumption to tell us that even as you go on into this long dark galus, and I'm no longer going to speak to you in the same way that I did until now, the conversation does continue, but in a different way. Mikan va'elach hot aznacha ushma l'divrei chachamim. Now, we connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu not through nevuah, but through our seichel, through divrei chachma, through Talmud Bavli. And that's why Dafka, at the beginning of this new tkufa, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did the same nace. The nace is because the Eish Shel Mala, the Medrash says, burns without consumption. The Eish Shel Mata doesn't. It's impossible. There's entropy. Second law of thermodynamics. If you burn something, it has to be burnt. There has to be a source for the fuel. But the Eish Shel Mala does not need to consume. Hasneh bo'er ba'esh ve'eino kal. We connect to the infinite through Nevuah, but also in the second Kufa, through Talmud Torah, through Torah Shebaal Peh, and the like. And thus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes ahead, and in the beginning of this second Kufa, he begins with this very important message. I'd like to add another piece, also a perspective of how we see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this second Kufa in Jewish history. This also I heard from Rav Moshe Shapiro, different shir. Take a look at the bottom of page 2 in the Makoros. So the Gemara over here asks, why is it that the Anshei Knesset HaGedola were called the Anshei Knesset HaGedola? The Gemara says, Shechzira Tar Liyoshna, because they restored the crown to its glory. What does that mean? Asa Moshe Amar Hakela Gadol HaGibor VaNora. Moshe praised HaKadosh Baruch Hu with that phrase. Asa Yirmiya VaAmar Nochrin Karkarin BeChalo Ayeno Reosav Lo Amar Nora. Yirmiyahu, think of Perek Lamed Beis, describes HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu at a time when the Babylonians were laying the groundwork to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, and he said, Nachrim Mekarkarin Bechalo, there are Gayim that are croaking in the sanctuary, Ayei Nora Osav, where is that Mida of Nora? And therefore he left out the word Nora. Asa Daniel Amar Nachrim Mishtabdim Bivanav Ayei Gvur Osav. And likewise, he said, Lo Amar Gibor. Asa Inhu, V'amru, Adarabba, Zui Gvuras, Gvur Raso, Shekoveshes Yisro. No, said the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, they also lived at a time when the Jewish people were subservient to foreign powers. We didn't have autonomy. Nevertheless, they said, no, we could see his Gvura. How so? He's Kovish Es Yitzro. Ezu Agibor Kovish Es Yitzro. Ve'elu heino ra'osav. Shil mali mo ra'osh al Kadosh Baruch Hu. Hayach uma achas yichol el eskayim bein ha'umos. Rabbanan hechi avdi hachi. Vakri takanta de takin Moshe. How could Yirmiyahu Daniel not do what Moshe did? Amar Rabbi Lazar mitoch shi yodin ba'Kadosh Baruch Hu shamitihu lefikach lo kizvuvo. Because they knew HaKadosh Baruch Hu is MS, they couldn't speak falsely. So what's going on here? Why is it that the Anshei Knesset HaGedola could understand this, and Yirmiyahu and Daniel couldn't? So the answer is, what the Gemara tells us at the end, is that we are Mishabech HaKadosh Baruch Hu in midos that we perceive, that are present in the world, that we experience and that we live. Yirmiyahu lived in a world where Nachrim Mekarkrin Bechala, where the Midah of Noraus was not present. And therefore, it would have been a lack of MS to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the Midah of Nora. Not that he felt that Hashem wasn't Nora, but that wasn't the Midah that was demonstrated at the time. And therefore, it's wrong to be Meshabeach HaKadosh Baruch Hu in that sense. It's like why we don't say Mashvaroch Merda Geshem in the summer. Right? I understand why we don't say Saint Talamata. That's a bakasha. Why don't we say Mashvaruach? It's praise. The answer is that that's not a midah that's present in the summer, or that we want to be present. So what did the Anshei Knesset Gedola realize? So the Anshei Knesset Gedola lived in the second Kufa. They understood that the midos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world, the way we perceive his Gevura, his Nora in the second stage of Jewish history is totally different than the way we perceive his Gevura as Nora in the first stage of Jewish history. We perceive his Gevura because he's Kovashis Yitzro. We perceive his Noraus because without his Nora, how could a kifso medes bein shiva zakenim? Gadol haroa shematzilan. The Gemara in Gittin, next source, makes this point very powerfully. The Gemara says, I'll just say it outside, there's no time. What did Titus do when he entered the Kodesh HaKadashim, Tafazona, and he rolled out a Sefer Torah, and he was bowled the Zona in the Kodesh HaKadashim? So, what did Rabbi Yirmiyah say, Rabbi Yishmael say about this? Mi kamocha ba'ilim Hashem, mi kamocha ba'ilmim Hashem. Who is like you among the mute? That you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, could see this despicable person doing the most despicable conceivable act and remain quiet, not kill him on the spot. So let's remember where that sentence was originally said. It was said, Kriyas Yamsuf, mi kamocha. That was a time when HaKadosh Baruch Hu's awesome power was revealed to the world through miracles. And it was obvious to one and all that he alone was the mighty one. That was the sea, the peak of that first Kufa. Yirmiyahu, who lived during that first Kufa, though the end of it, said, within the perspective of that first Kufa, I don't see any Noraos here. I see the opposite. Nachrim Mekarker in Beichalo. Aye Noraosav. So he couldn't be Meshabeach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But in the second Kufa, where do we see the Noraos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? In his Gvura. In his silence. Mi kamocha ba'il mim Hashem. We see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a world of Hester Panim. Not in a world of ore. It's to light the Neiros in a world of Hester Panim. To see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Hester Panim. You want to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Neiros in our Mativ in the most awesome way? What is an awesome manifestation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world? Greater than anything else. It's Titus being Bolazona in the Kodesh HaKadosh Mantav of the Sefer Torah. That's Mi Kamocha. But that's the Mikamocha of the second Kufa. In a sense, it's a more mature avoda. Not to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Nisim, but to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Choshech. That's the avoda that was Niskan on Chanukah. That's why Chanukah is the Yantif of Galus. That's why Chanukah speaks to us so much. That's why on Chanukah our avoda is to go ahead and to look at the world and look at the world of Hester Panim and see HaKadosh Baruch Hu even there. To connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu not through Nevuah but through the Seichel, through Talmud Torah, Shetar Shebal Peh. And we long for a day where we'll return to Eretz Yisrael and where in a sense the two forms of avoda will emerge dominant, where once again see HaKadosh Baruch Hu begilui, but we will have developed our understanding through ourselves. That's why Talmud Bavli is so important, because it comes from within, not from without. And that's something that's so important in the development of Klal Yisrael, where when we go back to Eretz Yisrael, b'mheir v'yameinu, it's not like we left the experience of the Galus, but we built on the experience of the Galus, of that relationship and means of relating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And at that point, Umala haaretz de'as Hashem k'mayim liyam mechasim. Okay, so everyone should have a good Shabbos, a Freilich and Chanukah. I hate to do this to you, but next week.